Welcome to the Mum Break Podcast, a place where you can feel normal, get helpful information, and laugh your ass off. Hopefully without peeing your pants. I'm your host, Erica, and I have two kiddos. I am not a mom expert, but I do have a zillion hours of therapy under my belt and no filter. I'm on my own journey to find happiness, and I want to help you on the way to yours. When I started to edit this episode for today, I actually looked back to see when this episode was recorded, and I am completely horrified and embarrassed to say that this episode was actually recorded with this guest in November of 2019. I'm releasing this in June 2020, so this is by far the biggest jump, and I am horrified to say that I let it slip this long. And I want to explain to you a little bit why. I have, and I'm not sure if you are aware, I have actually two podcasts. One is this podcast that you're listening to now called The Mum Break Podcast. And the other is called Mum Blogging Unplugged. Some of you may be familiar with it, but it's essentially a separate podcast where I can talk specifically about topics and content that relate to struggles and challenges that moms who blog face. Now, this episode was originally recorded for that podcast, and I'm going to be talking with Rebecca today all about goal setting for blogging, but I thought that it would actually be a really good fit for this podcast. Now, one of the reasons why I struggled with releasing it for so long was because I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my other podcast, Mom Blogging Unplugged. And I felt like this episode was so helpful and so packed with really useful, practical information that I didn't want to just throw it up on that podcast while it wasn't very active, because I haven't released a new episode in forever, as you can tell. So I think it's actually a better fit on this podcast itself. It has a lot, all of the examples are relating to blogging, but I think the underlying message is about goal setting and how to set goals that work for your life as a mom and fit into your different schedules and challenges and stages of motherhood. So I really hope that you guys love this episode. She is so full of information and knowledge, and I am, well, horrified that this took so long, but really, truly excited that I think this is the right fit on this podcast. So here she is. Hi guys, I am here with Rebecca from A Little Bit of Mom Sense. She is big in the Ottawa community. She is a coach, she is a marketer, she's a social media strategist, she's a freelance writer. She basically does and has done everything for, I'm going to say, over 10 years now at this point. Am I right?
Yep, over 10.
Yeah. But thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe before we jump in, you can tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Sure. What's that?
In your businesses, I guess you should say.
Yeah. Kind of all branches. And honestly, everything I've done has really branched from the blog, which is really interesting because I used to tell everyone the blog is my resume ultimately. And it still kind of acts like that. So I've been blogging on A Little Bit of Mom Sense, which is my parenting lifestyle blog, for over 10 years. And it started when I had my second baby. I actually started a blog when I had my first because I was reading a lot and was really into that community and that space. And so I started one, and I can remember it still had an intro. It was called Mummy See, Mummy Do. And okay. I knew it was cute. I liked it. And then it kind of evolved. It sat there. I had an intro post saying I'm going to blog, and then it went nowhere. And that was, I think, 2007. So in 2009, I knew I really wanted to do it, and a bit of Mom Sense came up as, you know, my thing, A Little Bit of Mom Sense, and it felt right. It felt good. So I started with the intention of just kind of sharing in the community and having a way to contribute to that online space that I was meeting other people. It also came at a time when Twitter was starting to get bigger, and it was my brother who said, go on Twitter, I think you'll like it. And so the two kind of went hand in hand, because then I felt like I had something to share on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And the joke, you know, with Twitter for a long time, the joke was, well, what else do you share? You know, no one wants to see your lunch every day. And I really think my first tweet, if I go back into the archives, is something to do with my lunch or food. That's which so is not shocking. And it feels so, because I still use Twitter. I still use and love Twitter. So it's kind of funny that it's so cliche, but I started that way. And it was really, you know, small, short posts that were just kind of things I was doing or updates on activities that were coming up. And it grew from there. And then over time, as I was using Facebook and Twitter more and more and quite effectively with my blog and sharing, and I was getting some recognition locally and nationally, I went to blog conferences and blog workshops. I started to get inquiries from small business owners saying, we're struggling with this area. It's a growth area. Facebook pages were fairly new. And so they wanted help. And I always tell people, you know, I started because someone approached me, a local business, and I said, I can only work from 9 to 11 at night. I'm writing the blog during the day. And frankly, I'm with two kids during the day. So mm-hmm. I was a stay-at-home mom. That was always, I still identify as a stay-at-home mom. My kids are 10 and 13 and go to school now. But I still feel like that. So, you know, I said, this is the time. And they said, no problem. We'll make it work because they just needed content and somebody to be on it. And then that evolved. I was able to work during the days because naps and everything else. And anyone who's doing this with kids at home and or as a side hustle, you know, you magically find time somewhere, a lot of evenings in the beginning. So I started to do social media management for small business. And then that's kind of grown over the years into freelance writing. And I help do content creation and clarity and visioning with messaging for small business and other bloggers.
It's so neat to see the evolution of it started as a new mom who tried a blog and realized that, you know, maybe it wasn't the right time. You had this new baby, wasn't the right space. You accepted that not for me right now. Come second kid, you give it a go and your business has evolved from tweets of your lunch to running content creation and strategy for small businesses. And you speak all across the country as well and teach this stuff. So it's neat to see that evolution of how you've grown.
I think part of it is that when I started the second time, I didn't have any intention with it. I knew I wanted to write. I knew I wanted a piece of this thing that was happening. And so I just did it, which I think for most of us in our businesses, our blogs, our life, half the battle, 90% of the battle sometimes is just the doing part. So finally just doing, pressing publish and getting it out there. And the rest, I'm still learning. I'm 10 years in and I'm still learning things because this industry changes so frequently. When mm-hmm. I started, there was no Instagram. So when it came out, I had to kind of adopt into Instagram and figure this out on how I would use it. So we kind of, you know, we have to just do. And then, and all the best laid plans, I like to plan. I like to have an idea. I like to feel comfortable. I'm not a risk taker. Mm-hmm. I'm not, that's just not who I am. But sometimes we do have to step out of our comfort to get into the next thing. And then for me over the years, it's been a balance between saying yes to things that maybe I, you know, would have scared me. The first time I spoke would have been, I think, at a conference in 2010 or 11. And so, you know, saying yes to those things that kind of feel a little uncomfortable, but you know you want it or you know you can do it and it fits and all that. Mm-hmm. So that power to say yes and the power to say no when it wasn't the right fit for my timing, when I didn't want to leave the babies, when I couldn't travel easily or readily, or it just wasn't the best use of my time. So the balance between yes and no, I think I've honed over the years and been much more comfortable in that decision-making process. And there's still times where, you know, I don't know if I did the right thing or should I have, you know, done yes, no, whatever. But having the discovery, because sometimes when you say no, you get to say yes to the things you really want.
I love that sometimes, so much.
Thank you. And sometimes you say yes, and you never would have thought you would have said yes. And it turns out to be the most amazing thing. So there's a comfort level that we kind of have to balance between that, because saying no is scary.
It's
saying
hard.
No is so hard. And then you watch someone else say more yeses and you think, well, I should be saying yes. But if it doesn't fit, if it doesn't feel right, if the timing's not right, if the collaboration on the blog isn't right, it's going to flop. So the yes, if you would have said it, becomes so much more stressful than a simple no. Or a no, not right now.
Do you have a checks and balances for how to decide what's a yes and a no? Because you make a really good point with social media. It's incredibly difficult and it creates this FOMO or fear of missing out because there's always all these amazing things and opportunities and challenges that people are tackling, and you see every stage, or at least you see the perceived thing that they want to show you at every stage. So saying no, I find in this generation is almost more challenging. So how do you, what checks and balances do you personally use to determine whether it's a yes or a no?
Yeah, it's a great question. The first thing is there's always a gut check. Mm-hmm. The gut check is there's two things that could be happening. One is my gut check saying, well, this is scary and new and you haven't done it before, or it's bigger than what you've done before, or the stage is bigger, whatever the case. So are you hesitating because of fear? So I really have to watch myself because, again, I'm not a risk taker. I battle anxiety. I have these things. I know that I put barriers in my own place. I know I'm my own worst enemy. So that gut check starts with, okay, why are you really fearful of this? Is it just the fear, or is there something more there? The other gut check is, you know, when it's not a great fit, you kind of, you know, there's often that first, well, maybe I should, because, and then you try to talk yourself into it. So you kind of start there. Then you kind of look at, okay, does it fit my goals? And this is the importance of goal setting. So knowing an opportunity sometimes knocks when you don't expect it. And so if it doesn't directly align, it doesn't mean you have to say no because, oh, I never planned for that this year. I actually don't plan out a whole year of things in advance because I find there are so many opportunities in this industry that come up at random or growth points that are unexpected. So I get that you don't want to, you know, just say no because it doesn't fit. But if I know my goals in general, and those goals might be personal, professional, financial, tying into, you know, professional, if I know those goals, then I can see, okay, how does it fit into what I really had already set out or what I'm already doing, or how will it be a growth point? And I can look at it that way. And then often I send a conversation starter to my husband and I say, what am I missing here? Or if I'm thinking of this or I'm thinking of that, and I talk it out because I find that helpful. Because sometimes, again, I think I answer myself incorrectly. I just tell myself stories. There's a mindset issue. So I like to have somebody else kind of bring it back to reality.
I love that. And I don't think that person necessarily needs to be your husband. And I love that.
No.
you guys have a different relationship. And I mean, you can maybe speak to a little bit more, but he's your accountant. He knows all the ins and outs of your business. He's very much involved in it. But I don't think that's the norm for people. With my situation specifically, as an example, my husband is 0% included in my business. He didn't even follow me on Instagram until a month ago. So he has no idea what's going on. So I love that he's involved, but I also think it's important that it's not necessarily that person. Maybe it's a girlfriend or a peer or somebody else as well.
Well, and I have to say, I have multiple groups of people like that. So I have mini mind or mini mastermind type people that I go to. I have friends who are in business. I have friends who are not in business that I don't even talk to business about very often, but sometimes I can, because they're so outside of it, they can give a different perspective. So I have multiple touch points of people that, depending on where I'm at in the decision-making, I can reach out. It's funny with my husband, he's absolutely involved, but yet not involved. So I call him my CFO because he's who I go to when I talk about money and stuff, but I make all the money decisions. So I will invest in something or, you know, say I'm doing this. And he doesn't know the ins and outs, the day to day, that kind of thing, but he's definitely my co-strategist. He's really great at bouncing ideas off of, I think, which I think it works because he's not a blogger. He's not in this world and he doesn't see all the good or all the dirt. So he kind of comes in it from, you know, his background and professional background. And so he can see it a little bit differently, which is nice. And sometimes less personally, because I can take things very personally sometimes. So I need somebody who's not invested in that from a personal standpoint to say, well, maybe this instead, right? So the decision-making process, having those people, and if you don't have those people, there are online groups that can help find those people. And sometimes it's an investment in a membership group or an investment in a Facebook group of time. And I find that really helpful because you see so much, you don't feel alone. And there are people online that you can turn to. And that's really where, like, the friends I turn to now in person, a lot of them started from Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And the blog community in Ottawa or the blog community in across Canada. So you find those other like-minded people.
I love that. Now, going back to one of those ways to say no, you mentioned sticking to your goals. So I see this as one of the biggest, and I kind of don't say this lightly, but biggest mistakes that I see bloggers or business owners, small business owners make is that they are constantly on the go and constantly hustling and constantly fighting to get things better. But the missing component of that is that what are they fighting for? Because they haven't necessarily set their goals. So why do you think that is? Why aren't people setting goals right now in their business?
I think there's probably a couple things at play. One is we feel goals are big and we tell ourselves goals have to be this overarching, big, massive thing that we want to attain. And if we, you know, set it, then we have to. And if we don't meet that huge goal, then we're a failure. So we tell ourselves all these stories about what goal setting actually is that I don't think are necessarily always true. Because sometimes a goal is I'm going to write one blog post a week. And mm-hmm. this week it's one. So it's attainable. And sometimes it won't be. Something happens. And, you know, as mom bloggers, we typically are doing this with babes on breasts or in arms or, you know, playing at our feet. And so one bad night of sleep or one teething, and this time of year with all the colds, it's hard to stay up on those schedules. So it doesn't have to be a huge goal. And I think big goals are great. Saying, you know, I want to, a couple of years ago, I started to lay the groundwork for, I want to speak more, or I want to have more of a presence in the, you know, certain blogging communities and be able to put myself out there for hire more, let's say. So that was a big goal. And then I broke it down into smaller goals throughout the year to help me meet that. But not every goal has to be huge. So that's part of the problems. I think we overwhelm ourselves with that idea. So look at your goals, aim big. There's nothing wrong with that, but also include, you know, the smaller goals that really will help move things forward. And I think the other thing is we just don't even know how to goal set in the sense of, well, what do I turn to as a goal? And does it have to just be money? And does it have to just be, you know, the definition of what my blog is? It's not a thing that has to be set in stone. Goals mm-hmm. should be fluid. Even with a strategy, there's some fluidity that happens. And I think that's important to remember, because if we say, I want to do X, and then our journey over the year takes us into Y, it doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. Pivoting is a really favorite thing of mine as I go along. It's why I've grown my business into multiple income streams. It's why, you know, I'm able to say yes or no with a little bit more confidence than I used to. You can pivot as you need to. I just don't like reactive pivots for the sake of pivoting. So mm-hmm. there is a difference. That's why goals are great, because you know, you kind of, well, why did I set that goal to begin with? And maybe this pivot makes sense.
When I think... Because I've been on this sort of big health journey, it's easy to understand goal setting from a health perspective. And it's sort of a good example in the sense that setting that goal of losing 50 pounds is a big, scary, overwhelming goal. So the goal doesn't need to be, like you're saying, that big goal. It could be some days my goal is to just put on a sports bra. It's literally just to maybe get out of my house and not sit in my house all day. So I think at least then it helps define what actions I'm going to take. If the goal is to put on a sports bra, I'm not going to open the drawer with my, I don't have fancy bras, who am I kidding? with my less supportive sports bras, none of them have wires anymore. Who are
yeah, we? No one wants a wire now.
Those don't exist. But it's that I see what you're saying, and that it can be so overwhelming. So just why bother? And instead I'm just going to go create content or answer, you know, comments on Instagram, which may ultimately tie to your goal, but probably not.
And I think too, there's a difference between we look online and we see somebody who's up here in their goals. It's like, okay, those are, you know, our dream goals, our big goals. And those are great. I love having big goals. And I see others who are up in living my big goals in my future. And I'm like, okay, awesome. That's, I have something to attain. And maybe I'm here waiting for those goals, but I'm not taking into account all these steps in between before they got to that big goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we think that our journey is going to be so parallel to other people's journeys. And it just doesn't go that way. We're on our own path. We need to make, because my path absolutely was different than from someone else's who said yes more than I said yes, because I made choices to say no. Yeah. And I lived with that and I was perfectly okay with that. And now I'm at a space where I'm saying yes a lot more readily, or I'm changing the speed of my path because I'm able to. And so we I think need to give ourselves permission to be in the journey that we are in, not in someone else's, and be okay with that. And I don't think we give ourselves enough credit for all of those, even the small goal setting steps that we're reaching. We're not giving ourselves the credit that we really should be. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I do often, and I will, and you might see me in groups do, when people hit even small milestones or they hit some goal or something good happens in their blog or business, I'll say, okay, great. How are you celebrating? And that they always kind of, they always like, you know, or I'll get a message from, they're like, I never thought about it, or I don't know. And it doesn't mean you're booking a trip, although a lot of the times that's on my goal list.
But that's mine too.
Always, right? I'm like, oh, where can I go? Let's book a new contract so I can go somewhere. Doesn't work that way always, but sometimes it might just be I buy a bottle of champagne and that Friday night, you know, we are toasting to that thing. Or a few months ago, I set a goal. The next session I book one-on-one sessions. The next time I book a one-on-one session, there are these pink pair of shoes, heels, pumps at Marshall's that I was eyeing. They're like patent pink. They're pretty. They're the same color as my branding. And I said, if I book a new one, I'm buying them. And within, I think it was 4 or 5 days, I booked and I went right to the store and bought them. And I'm like, those are my contract shoes. So I don't think we celebrate that. And that was a good contract, but other times I celebrate, you know, the launch of something that I finally published something, or I finally got something done, or a to-do list, or an email came that was just really great. So taking the time to celebrate those small goals and those small milestones, or the big ones, I think then you start to feel that momentum and you feel like you're getting somewhere. Because if we just go, okay, well, I hit it, but now I have to create a new goal, we're missing the joy of hitting that goal.
I think that what you just said is also really important, because when we go back to comparing online, I remember really specifically, I had this big push, I think it was last year or about a year and a half ago, to hit 10,000 followers on Instagram. Part of that goal was because my marketing brain loves the idea of having to swipe up. So it creates all of these additional opportunities to promote things. That's how my brain works. It's just an arbitrary number otherwise. But then immediately after I hit that number, I A, didn't celebrate, and B, all I could focus on was the next arbitrary number that wasn't actually really tied to anything. And no matter what stage you're at in the journey, you're always going to compare to the next person who's a little bit further down that path. So why not just sit and enjoy in the moment and your own journey that you're on?
Yes. And I think we need to do that. I think it's the only way to enjoy, because otherwise, why are we doing it? We're just causing ourselves grief and it doesn't feel good, right? That doesn't feel good. I think too, there's a difference between comparing ourselves to that person who's on that next or that couple levels up and being inspired by. And I think inspiration is a great thing in this community. I love being inspired by those who are doing something different and creative and unique or successfully, because it says, you know what, one, it can happen, because a lot of times you think, can this even be a business, or how do I, you know, make money from this, or how do I become a personality that in this field that I want to, you know, be blogging about. So it's nice to see that people are doing well, and I like celebrating that too. So, you know, being inspired by that is great. It's where we get bogged down by it that I think is a problem. And, you know, we are hard on ourselves, because it is a completely different journey.
Yeah, it's such an important point, and I love that, the idea of comparing someone versus inspiring someone. It's such a good point. Today's episode is brought to you by Reconnectin 30, a digital love prompt system for partners after children. Now, this is a system that I created after my husband and I had our two kids and were trying to figure out how to reconnect with one another after, let's just say, a challenging few years with young children. I tested out a whole bunch of different ideas, one of which was a paper copy love prompt journal. I pretty quickly realized that with young children around, that was getting turned into a children's coloring book and we would misplace it and lose it. But I still wanted the connection that it made with my husband and I, starting to think about why we loved each other in the first place, who we are now as adults with children. So I created a digital love prompt system for partners after children. And what that is a daily email system for 30 days, Reconnectin 30, that each you and your partner both get an email that challenges you to start thinking about the difficult questions that you don't necessarily talk about on a day-to-day basis. Bringing things back to why you fell in love, what you like about each other, what challenges each other. And you can get that all at reconnectin30.com. It's only $9.99 for the system, and you will each get a 30-day digital love prompt system. It's at reconnectin30.com. Now, this whole overwhelming journey to a goal and setting goals, what is your sort of best starter tip to venture down the path of goal setting? What's the first thing that people can do if they're, you know, at home nursing, they want to start a blog, they know that they need to set a goal, but they just don't have the mental capacity to be able to handle it at that point in time? What do you tell these women?
I would say the first thing is decide which type of goal are you setting? Because there's two types I set every year, every quarter. Usually I like to do quarterly, monthly, weekly. I look at things in a 3-1-1 format because I find it just, that's how my brain works. That's how I look at the calendar. That's how I can shift things and do pivots as I need to. Yep. But there are two types I set. One is just the actual actionable goals, things I want to achieve, that kind of benchmark. And the other is financial. So in the beginning, there was no financial attachment when I first started it. It was, my goal was I was going to hit publish on this blog. My goal was I created a logo. My goal was I was going to publish, you know, however many times a week and share it on Twitter and then eventually Facebook. So that's how I set the goals, was just simply, here's what I want. And then I created the goals also on how I wanted to feel. I didn't want to feel like it was, you know, taking over my life. I didn't want to feel, you know, I wanted it to feel like I intended, which was I wanted a piece on the internet to write about that was mine. Mm-hmm. So if I started to veer from that, if I felt like, oh, I felt guilty because I didn't publish a post today, then I had to check that. That's not part of my goals. I didn't want to feel that way. But my goal was to write more. So I wanted to balance that. Then as it grew, within about a year, and I started to put out that I would accept advertising and that, you know, I was working with some sponsor stuff or PR companies were approaching me. Then it was, okay, I still have those feeling goals and the growth goals. So I want to be sharing more. I want more traffic. I want more posts that hit this type of topic. And then I hit financial goals as well. So I would set them out. And I think my first year of blogging, I think it was something like $500 for the year. Like it paid for my hosting, it paid for, you know, and I had a couple advertisers and that was the goal and I achieved it. And when I did my income tax and it was like $500 was mine and it just, that's where I set it. And then every year I set those goals and they've gotten bigger. And as I've grown the business into freelance writing or into the consulting side, the content creation for business side, that's changed. Again, though, I still go back to, okay, how is this making me feel? And, you know, what do I want to do? So then the goals start to become, you can see it more. I want to write more, or I want to write for other publications more. I want to write off the blog more. So Then once I knew that, I had to make decisions to do that. I had to pitch them, or I had to make contact with them, or I had to apply, or I'd keep an eye out for, you know, those who were looking for writers. So that's kind of, you know, the two types of goals I go back and forth between, mm-hmm. and the two go hand in hand. But in the beginning, the financial part was separate. It definitely was about, what do I want this to be for me? And for some people, it is, I want to start a blog and make money off of it. And that's a perfectly acceptable, awesome mm-hmm. goal. But you still, well, then what's that money? So set a goal for that.
Pick a number, commit yeah. to the number. And I think it's also picking a realistic number too, because, and I think this is one of the things I teach in my course as well, is that this is not an easy profession that we choose to be in. It is a grind. It is emotionally taxing. And even if you set your goals and your boundaries and you say no when you need to, it's still hard. So picking an obscure, I'm going to make $100,000 this year, it's not necessarily a good strategy either. You have to actually break it out and figure out, I mean, you said, I'm going to make $500 this year. It's being still dreaming, but also being realistic about that dream so you can actually hit it and reach that goal.
Or at the very least, if you set a big number, which is great, reverse engineer it to figure mm-hmm. out what you need to do to get there, right? You have to be able to say, this is my number, because if I sell X sponsored posts plus X ads on the blog, plus I, you know, have this partnership, it will equal that over time. And then you have to go to each of those units and figure out how you're selling the units. So I think that that's where the numbers, and I love tying in goals to financial goals, because decision-making then ties into it as well. So if I set a big financial goal and the only way to get there is by doing something that makes me miserable, I really need to look at that and say, is this what I want? And then change either the financial side or the how I'm getting there side of the feeling side of goals, and then tie the two together. Because for me, this is, yes, this is a way, this is how I make income. I make, you know, more than I did certainly in the beginning. And I make it doing it in the way I want to do it. So, and that for me is always back to time, because my time has value. So if I was doing this and working 80 hours a week, it wouldn't work for me.
And everyone would have that number though, that makes that okay. I would work 80 hours a week for X number of dollars. I don't know what that number is right now, but I love working. And we, and I know based on conversations we've had in the past, we value our time with our children differently. I don't know how to say that politically correctly. You want to be there for, you know, making the pizza lunch, and you want to be on the school council. I want nothing to do with those things. Those aren't things I'm passionate about. Right. So
yep.
That's where you come back to. You value what pockets of time you're doing differently. That's an important piece for you. And because you're spending time on the student council, or what's parent council? I don't even know what it's called, because I'm not on. What's it called?
It's parent council. Yeah. Parent council.
Okay. Because you want to spend time on the parent council, that means that you can't spend time doing something else.
Yeah.
Time,
and that's why I think time becomes a commodity, and we have to value it. Because when we say, well, no biggie, I'll just do it some other time, or I'll say yes because I have the time. Technically, if I look at my calendar in any given week, sure, I have the time. If I ditch pizza lunch and I ditch parent council or the, you know, field trip I have coming up on Monday, yes, I get that. And for other people, it's the same thing, but just different type of time. So they'll look and say, oh, sure, I have time, but they're going to ditch their time at the gym maybe. And that's not good either. Like, those are the priorities. That's why when you're goal setting, you have to tie it into how you feel and what you want this business, this blog, to look like for you. Because when it becomes all consuming, I think we run into red danger zones. And I've been there. Burnout in this industry is real. Mm-hmm. And when my kids were little, it's different now too, right? My kids are gone all day now. So I have real work hours that I used to not have in a much more concentrated way. I don't always use them well, let's be honest.
But if someone compares you, someone compares what and sees what you're doing, you're home, like, I mean, let's say 10 to 2, 9 to 2 every single day, whereas these other moms may be home with two toddlers all day just trying to keep them alive. And they're comparing to you, which isn't
way different.
Fair.
way different. And I've been there. I totally get it. And that's where that, you know, I said yes or no, really based on, okay, if I go to this meeting or if I go speak on this panel when, you know, the kids were 4 and 2, it meant my dad watched the baby and the pickup at preschool was different. Like it, and I did it. I would try to arrange that when it made sense versus it didn't always work that way. It's not that easy. And so we forget, and that goes back to that journey thing. Like my journey is very different than someone else's, and 10 years in is different than a year. And conversely, there's some people who are a year in and have found amazing success. Mm-hmm. And for those of us who have been blogging for a long time, a big red flag is if you're talking to someone, they say, well, I've been around longer, you know, that's a red flag. Because I could never look at somebody who's in it, like there's so much freshness and creative and new and so much opportunity. So of course, a lot of people are going to find success in a short amount of time, mm-hmm. right? So again, those are two very different journeys. It's not, there's no right or wrong way. And I think that if we don't value the time, because I remember when the kids were little, I would work when they went to bed. So I would be mm-hmm. 9 to 1 a.m. writing, mm-hmm. doing back end updates, you know, that kind of thing. And there was a shift probably when they were almost both in school full time. And I can remember thinking, I can't wait for these evening things to be done. I'm just so over it because mm-hmm. it was hard. It was really hard. And so anyone out there listening that is in that baby stage and, you know, waiting for that prime nap time to do the, you know, all the work, I completely get it. And there are times when it's okay if you're not constantly hustling. I don't love that feeling of being forced to do it or, and I mean, hitting a deadline and giving yourself a deadline and getting, like, you have to do stuff to be successful. I get that. But sometimes you have to say, okay, does this make sense right now? And what can I do to make it easier?
In your experience, since you've done both the constantly hustling and the, let's just say, the more guarded use of your time, have you noticed a difference at all in your success from when you were just hustling and almost at burnout versus when you've learned to say no?
I think I feel happier in general when I have a much more balanced control over my time. I can remember doing a project, the kids were younger. I said, yes, it was probably a November project because it's before Christmas. And I think, yes, money. And it was something I would never say yes to now. It wasn't even an outward facing like bit of Mom Says project. It was a behind the scenes kind of, you know, working on stuff to hand off, but it was good work. It was consistent for the month, but it just ruined my time management. And it meant that I wasn't blogging as often. And blogging for me, I might only blog once or twice a week now, but it's still my home base. It's still my love. It's still, I'm a blogger at heart. Mm-hmm. As much as Instagram takes over the world and whatever the case, I still love to be rooted back on a blog. It's still kind of my home base. And certainly my resume. So, you know, I wasn't doing that and it was a busy time for the family. And then I would sit at night and finally have time to myself and have to spend it on this project. And I felt really resentful and really bothered by that. And so I knew that I couldn't do that anymore. So that's the biggest difference. When I was hustling in other ways, and that's an overused term, I know, but when I was super busy or saying yes and you know, I hit peak time, and this November, it's a prime example. It's very busy. It's a deadline month. I get that, but I'm enjoying it because I know that I've said the things I'm working on that I've said yes to are the stuff I want to work on. They're the things that move me forward. So from a success perspective, I think our own passion and happiness and how that fits in will move us forward, period. Because when you're working on something, you know, into the hours because you're excited about it and it's new and it's interesting, it's a completely different feel and outcome. You know, you're pouring so much into it. It's that startup culture almost where you're really giving it, but it feels good. You're doing something. There's a mm-hmm. goal there. And so I think that's just, it's more how you're using the time. And we can't win. Like the guilt is going to be there. So when I was just doing, you know, 3 blogs a week, I was writing, it wasn't for anyone. I was barely making any money. if I was at the computer and I wasn't, you know, doing something fun or crafty or whatever, because I'm still a stay-at-home mom, was I would feel guilty somehow. Or if I stayed up too late and I was tired, I'd feel guilty. And we live with this guilt no matter what. So we have to decide how we're spending our time.
Now, in terms of that day-to-day and how we're spending our time, once we've set our goals, how can you, and what tools do you use to stay on track and to, you know, actually complete and work towards that goals when things get hard or when you lose that passion? Because like any business or any job, there are things in this business and this line of work that aren't fun. I myself hate doing my finances. It's something that it's the bane of my existence. And my husband has to actively hunt me down to make me do them. We all have that. So how can you stay on track and then move towards your goals, even in those times of just blah, for lack of a better word?
Yeah. For me, it's tech. Anytime I get burdened by tech in the back end, or there's a new app or something didn't work, or WordPress goes down or whatever the case, for me, that will send me into a complete spiral of, I hate everything. Why am I doing this? Because that's not where my passion is. I'm a writer. I'm creative. I want to work on the stuff. And we always want to work on the good stuff, right? That's why I always joke, ideas, like making ideas, we all love that. That's fun. Implementing ideas, we have to push ourselves sometimes, right? So I think part of it is knowing what your goals are. And that's why in general, and so even if I set a goal, so if I'm setting a goal that I want to increase, you know, freelance writing, or if I set a goal that I want to work with more, and that was my goal this year, was I wanted to be more visible, which I started actually about 2 years ago, really laying the groundwork to be more visible in the blogging small business community as a content person, to really shift the way we think about content online. So I spent a lot of time increasing my Instagram posts to talk about it. It's still primarily family, but I hadn't barely been talking about work stuff until, you know, that 2 years ago where I really started to increase it. This year I did more video. So I made smart decisions that tied into what my goals were going to be. So when I sat and I only had a few hours before school pickup, or, you know, whatever the case was, or if I had, I have freelance deadlines I do weekly. So if I am getting those done first, because client work tends to get done before the blog, so then I have the small amount of time for the blog, you know, how am I spending it? Well, I'm spending it recording those videos, or I'm spending it pushing out something that ties into my expertise. And I'm doing that because that's where my goal was to improve it. If I'm writing for the blog and I know recipes do well and I need to get some more recipes on there, so I have to spend time focusing on that. Or this time of year is rich with content. I have tons of content this time of year because it's the holidays and I share a lot of stuff and I have things in the draft. So that's how I do it. Or if I have a sponsored post that has to happen, it has to happen first. So there are natural deadlines that we have to follow, and you just kind of prioritize that. And then I wouldn't spend as much time, you know, scrolling, although I scroll anyway. I have downtime. Like, I'm an in-bed scroller, let's be honest. So that's where I'm going to personally chat with people on stories. But I might not spend time scrolling as much in the middle of the day. Whereas if it was a down day, maybe I would have a tea and sit down and just spend time scrolling. But if I'm working hard on deadlines and I have some things to move forward because the next day's all meetings, then I'm making, you know, that decision different. I also block my time in the sense of, I know I'm most productive and I have to work in the morning.
Yeah, me too.
8 in the morning, and that's after I drop kids off, and 10:30, 11, I need to be super productive. I can get a full day's worth of work when I'm really productive in that morning. And then in the afternoon, I just can't. So maybe I'm making Canva images in the afternoon because it's a little bit less, right?
I'm just kind on of the like, couch watching Grey's Anatomy. I do all my Canva stuff there. I hate it. I hate it.
Right? But it's got to get done. So it's one of those things. Yeah, I'll put on a Hallmark movie, or I'll put on Netflix or something and just kind of do images, or I'll, you know, make that kind of stuff. So I know when I'm most productive, so utilize that time, and I know what needs to get done. So I set real deadlines, because clients have real deadlines and freelance has real deadlines, and I set fake deadlines. So if my real deadline is on the Thursday of the week, I'm setting a fake deadline for Tuesday.
Ooh, that's the first I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, I'm a fake deadline. And yes, you know it's a fake deadline. It's like when people set their clocks ahead so that they're not late. Yeah. Of course, I know it's a fake deadline, but because it's there and everything goes in my Google Calendar, because it's there, it's kind of this like, okay, get it done by Tuesday and you'll be much happier. Worst case scenario, you have Wednesday and Thursday still.
That exact situation happened to me this week because I was doing a refresh of my online media kit. I had it all the content done. I pressed publish on Tuesday because I had set the goal to set it on to do it on Thursday. I pressed publish on Tuesday and then my technology broke and exploded. The page disappeared. I went on tech support. Like I literally spent 2 days on support, digging through accounts, passwords, harassing IT people. And I kept saying, this has to be done by Thursday, although I have no actual external deadline. I have nothing to send this to on Thursday, but if I don't get it done on Thursday, I knew that we were today recording this podcast episode and I have a busy day for the rest of the day, so it wouldn't get done. But things like that happen. Technology blows up. Things don't work. And every single other time I've published a page, it's worked just fine, but you have to account for the unknowns as well.
And you don't know what will happen. So maybe, yes, I have, Thursday is good, you know, looks good when I set the deadline, or that's the hard deadline of a freelancer or a blog post for a sponsor that has to go up. And so Thursday I set the deadline and then suddenly something comes up and, you know, Thursday's looking a little rough. It's not going to be a day of writing and or finishing editing, whatever. So these fake deadlines I set for myself are kind of gentle nudges to keep myself on track. And it works. Everything goes in my Google Calendar. I still make lists. So I typically have a list for the week that I write out. I have Google Calendar yelling at me in various formats at all times. And I will put ridiculous things in Google Calendar. I'll put email so-and-so in Google Calendar. Mm-hmm. Like everything goes in there. And then, so I have this kind of an organized way of doing that. And then the other thing is I'm a big action taker. I love taking action in terms of, you know, just getting it done, pushing it out. So I like to do things almost every week that will either reach out to a potential sponsor or a potential collaboration or a follow-up on something, or, you know, you go to a networking event, you say, we should totally connect on that thing, or, you know, swap blog posts or something. And then the real key is to do that, to email and say, remember we chatted, let's talk about what that looks like. So I really like to keep an ongoing list of, you know, who am I reaching out to? What email am I sending? This is where, you know, speaker applications come in, that kind of thing. Where am I spending my time? Those are the things that are also going to move me ahead and find success. So I make time for that.
I love that so much. Okay. If people want to stalk you online, where can they find you?
They can find me at Bit of Momsense on basically every social account, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. That's the same handle everywhere. And RebeccaStanisic.com is my content side of things on the website. And BitOfMomSense.com is my website with all the parenting stuff and local Ottawa things, national things, family travel, all the good stuff of just motherhood in general.
Amazing. And I will put the links for all of you guys in there so you can hunt them down and go into the description below and click through, because your last name is a bit tricky.
It can be, yes.
Thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate picking your brain today. It was incredibly enlightening.
Thank you for having me. It was great.